Welcome to Federal Insights, sponsored by Verizon. Here's today's moderator, Tom Temin.
Agencies across the board plan to update their IT networks, whether to deliver better service, accommodate cloud computing, or to increase security, maybe all three. For the strategy of one niche agency, I spoke with Dr. James Sumpter, Chief Enterprise Architect at the Air Force Research Laboratory.
So the Air Force Research Laboratory's mission is a research and development mission, R&D mission, as we say. And we're responsible for developing and innovating technologies that are delivered ultimately into the hands of a warfighter. We think of ourselves as on the left side of the life cycle, if you will, in that concept and development area. And we support the Air Force and the Space Force.
And you are physically located throughout the Air Force, or does everything, all the research and development, happen in one central location?
We are distributed across the United States at different bases with our technical directorates, which have domains of expertise in different areas like information, sensors, munitions, space vehicles, rocket propulsion, and so forth. And so those technical directorates are located at bases across the country. And that's part of our challenge, is to connect that R&D mission up across those technical directorates that are distributed geographically.
Sure. And is the research done by Air Force practitioners, I guess maybe uniforms and civilians, or is there also a large grant-making part of this so that academic and other research organizations work for you under grants?
We have a broad range of partners, as you just pointed out. There are about 6,000 or 7,000 civilians that work for the Air Force Research Laboratory. We have government civilians as well as military folks that that work in the lab. And then we work with a number of partners in the private sector and industry, everything from the primes to we have a lot of small businesses that contribute new technologies into the pipeline as well. And then we have a number of key relationships with academic institutions and other institutions that that help us further our mission.
And by the way, what are some of the top areas for research now? What are the hot buttons the Air Force is seeking answers in?
I would say, a couple of really top areas now, of course, increasing focus on the mission in space with our new Space Force and developing out our capabilities at that level or at that layer. And another area with a lot of research happening actively now is our hypersonic programs and technologies that go into hypersonic platforms and vehicles of all shapes and sizes.
All right. Well, let's get down to your particular job, and you are the Chief Enterprise Architect there. Give us an overview of the network that you now have to support all of this, and maybe how it ties in perhaps to the larger Air Force departmental network.
Sure. So the current networks that we have now have been built up over time. We have a lot of legacy networks, if you will, a lot of isolated enclave networks, and we have we don't have the desired level of visibility really into our entire infrastructure, our information systems portfolio that we would like to have. We have a mission that is underway and a lot of amazing folks that are working on that mission from a day-to-day basis. But I think most of them across the lab would tell you that there's certainly room for improvement with our infrastructure and information systems starting at our network levels. So part of our mission with our digital transformation and digital war room effort that has been underway for almost a year now, as a new kind of program and an initiative started by General Pringle and Air Force Research Laboratory, has been to build in more modern cloud adopted, cloud accessible, commercial based technology, leverage infrastructure and networks for the Air Force Research Laboratory to enable its mission to accelerate and go faster.
And getting to that issue of needing greater visibility into the network and what is on it, I imagine one of the important reasons for that is all of the intellectual property and the research products that are, in some cases, secret, or in some cases, very sensitive to the Air Force. And so you would need that visibility to ensure the protection of that data. Is that a fair way to put it?
Absolutely. Yes, you hit on another key challenge for us. Of course, there's There's privacy needs and security needs within the commercial sector as well. But in the DoD, we have some unique needs in that area. And what we're looking in general is, in terms of an operating kind of philosophy, is as much as possible to adopt and adapt commercial technologies to better secure our intellectual property and better secure our information systems at those different classification levels that we need to operate. And we think we can do a much better job of this going forward than we have been by leveraging a lot of the new innovative commercial technologies that that are available to support this, like software-defined networks and so forth.
Because the cloud providers have themselves come a long way in being able to offer, I think in some cases, up to IL3, IL5 level security. So is that something the Air Force would be, or the research laboratory would be planning to take advantage of if those FedRAMP high level types of facilities are out there?
Absolutely. So we are working actually directly with the cloud service providers and a number of other commercial companies to bring in their best technical solution architectures to what we're building out for the Air Force Research Laboratories. We're working directly with teams with Microsoft, with Amazon, with Google, just to name, you know, the three big ones, but others as well, cybersecurity firms and so forth. And they are helping us architect and develop and implement those solutions at the different impact levels. You mentioned there's IL2, IL4 and 5. Those are the unclassified levels that we're building up capabilities at. And then we have our secret and top secret levels above that that we also need to support. So part of the infrastructure fabric that we are building up includes an approach where we decouple the layers of the physical infrastructure from the data, from the application, from the platforms, from the control and the services, and offer those uniformly across those classification levels. And then we are building in a capability to move data securely where appropriate, vertically through those classification levels as well to completely support AFRL's mission.
Right, because you do have operators and users at different levels, and sometimes the same data has to be available to people at different levels.
Absolutely. That's correct. Yes, sir. So, and sometimes it's the same person working at those different classification levels. And so they really need a capability to be able to switch between the tools, the applications and the data, the models that they have at those classification levels. And in some cases, they need to be able to move those things from one area to another across classification levels, put them all together, for instance, to drive, say, a particular modeling and simulation scenario that they're trying to bring those models and data in from different areas.
And just the simple fact, does this come into play also that contractor personnel and government personnel are working remotely more, and that adds to the complexity of being able to give them secure access regardless of their location?
It does, yeah. So, you know, just like the private sector, a lot of changes have come about in the last couple of years, and some of them have been for the better. And in terms of driving the recognition that we need increased and better remote access to support a lot of the hybrid work that we can do right now, that's actually accelerates our mission to allow folks to have that flexibility to work from different areas. But we want their user experience to be great no matter where they're working and where they are contributing to the mission.
So that sounds like support for some of the newer forms of cybersecurity and login. Are you working, by the way, to get rid of the password paradigm that seems to be so persistent for so many agencies over so many years?
We absolutely are, and we're really excited about that because, as you mentioned it, I think that's one of the key areas for a better user experience. That we would like in our private lives and when we come to work and when we're working on our mission. So we want to give kind of an equal level or better experience for folks in terms of getting access to what they need. And underlying that is our journey to develop a zero trust architecture and a zero trust network security into our ecosystem in alignment with a lot of what you're seeing done in the DoD and the broader Air Force. So we're looking forward to leveraging that with our commercial partners to enable those kinds of things over time for our workforce.
And has the rise in numbers of mobile devices, or simply the proliferation of devices that users have, has that affected your approach to the next generation of network?
Absolutely. So we are looking out from, you know, everything now from IoT, Internet of Things kinds of devices and sensors. You might commonly think of things like thermostats and so forth, but they could be sensors on our different systems, and the data that comes from that. Our systems themselves are getting smarter. So we talk about those things sometimes as edge devices. And then we have a myriad of endpoint devices that you alluded to, like mobile phones, tablets, laptops, and what have you. And again, we want our folks to be able to work effectively and efficiently wherever they are, and with whatever resources they need or that they deem are most appropriate to contributing to the mission and the work they're trying to do. So, you know, to enable that, we do have to include all of those endpoint, IoT, and edge devices within our IT portfolio and our, you know, so we're looking forward to architecting and keeping a real-time model, a digital twin, if you will, of our infrastructure to support dynamic asset management across our IT portfolio. And that goes all the way out into those mobile devices. And we believe we'll be able to leverage this kind of information increasingly in the future to tune and optimize the system, but also to improve our security posture and understanding of recognizing things like anomalous behaviors and so forth and the usage of these devices, while simultaneously, as I said, enabling and supporting faster research for our workforce.
Dr. James Sumpter, Chief Enterprise Architect at the Air Force Research Laboratory. We'll return with more of the interview after this short break. I'm Tom Temin.
Small cell lung cancer can affect anyone, not only smokers. The good news is early lung cancer screenings can detect small cell lung cancer before it spreads, when the disease is most treatable. Join Stand Up To Cancer and Jazz Pharmaceuticals to raise awareness of small cell lung cancer and accelerate the pace of research. Ask your healthcare provider about screening options that might be right for you or a loved one. Visit standuptocancer.org/lung to learn more.
Welcome back to my interview with Dr. James Sumpter, Chief Enterprise Architect at the Air Force Research Laboratory. We are discussing the next generation network technology to support mission delivery. Let's talk about the digital war room effort. You mentioned that earlier on. You're a year into it. Tell us more about what that is and what you envision with it.
This is a really exciting opportunity, I think, where we have great alignment between people, processes, and technology, in terms of them all being ready and at a state where digital transformation is possible within the Air Force Research Laboratory and the broader Air Force. So we're excited to bring digital transformation and all of that means across those three areas, across our culture and our workforce, across our processes and improving them, adding in automation, doing more with our data and understanding more about our data and using that to inform improve processes and working towards the future. And of course, leveraging technology, leveraging work that's happening in the commercial sector, and then the investment that they are making to continuously improve the technology. We need to position the Air Force Research Laboratory so that we can consistently adapt and adopt those technologies into what we are doing, so that we focus on our core competencies in supporting the Air Force and the Space Force from an R&D perspective.
And let's talk about the idea of the software-defined network, because as you move toward greater use of commercial clouds, then most of the networking is between Air Force clients and the cloud, and between maybe the cloud and your partner networks. So how does this all look in terms of what you'll end up with these clouds and your own facilities in a software-defined manner?
Sure. So I mentioned earlier we were already working with the big three cloud service providers. I think that while they have many services in common, they have some unique services. So we want all of those services available to our workforce to leverage in the cases where they are unique. And from the workforce perspective, we don't want them to have to make a lot of decisions or have knowledge in advance of exactly where that particular service they need is. So by using software-defined networks, we can create a landing zone or a portal for our users where they log in, and what they need is available to them, or they can easily search for it and find it. And where that actually resides is abstracted away from them. It's not something they have to make a decision about. And our software-defined wide area networks and software-defined networking technologies in general will help us on that front, I think, and again, improve the user experience. But there's another important aspect to adapting these, a couple of them actually. One of them is being able to incorporate new technologies, new network topology configurations and architectures with that software-defined kind of capability and the flexibility that comes with doing that. It's integral to our support from a security standpoint as well, in terms of supporting our zero trust and dynamic governance and policies of data and information and applications.
Would you say that software-defined networking then is essentially networking as a service? And if so, where does the service come from?
Yeah, no, thank you. That's a great lead into another advantage I meant to mention for the last question. And that was that I think it's going to bring us a lot of flexibility in allowing our workforce to have the kinds of networks that they need. Earlier, we were talking about working at different levels of classification and the needs there. Oftentimes, programs actually need what we sometimes call digital sandboxes, where they need safe areas that don't touch other systems, so to speak, or aren't connected with other systems, so that they can go in and experiment with and with new technologies. Perhaps they're writing some new code. Perhaps they're doing an experiment with some new software that they've developed or that a partner has developed. And they need an isolated capability to do that. So that's a digital sandbox kind of capability that we can spin up on demand for our researchers, if you will, and SDNs help with that. Currently, we have a lot of networks that are built up by the researchers that have that need today, and we don't have good visibility or awareness that those networks oftentimes even exist. And then they're fraught with complications now with lead times in terms of hardware, because they're often based on setting up physical hardware infrastructure within directorates for users to take advantage of. So I think the SDNs are also going to drive a capability where we are increasingly flexible and have better adaptability and can better serve our workforce while at the same time actually consolidating and driving a tremendous amount of efficiency into our systems, our cloud-based networking capabilities.
Yeah, that's really key. With SDN, you can provision an instance in the cloud of a research network complete with memory, hardware, storage, and all of this as software, and so that you don't have that acquisition cycle for buying hardware to do a particular experiment or project.
Absolutely. So, you know, I mentioned the on-demand aspect of that. And so as much as possible, we would like to drive down the decision-making, you know, all the way down to the bench level, if you will, to the scientist and engineer that needs it, that they have that self-service on-demand capability, and they can spin up those kinds of resources, and it can be ephemeral or temporary, or it can be a long-term sustained resource. But the advantage also that comes with that is that at the enterprise level, we will have some awareness, observability, a monitoring capability, and an accountability in terms of how our portfolio is used, what the usage patterns are. And so we can tune and optimize the system overall over time to continuously improve the services that we make available to the workforce.
And what effect does all of this have on the physical network infrastructure that you have now with wires and all of the network appliances that form a network? Will that still be in place, or do you replace that, or how does that all work?
Absolutely. Another timely question. So we are in the process of developing what I call an as-is architecture for our physical or our transport networks across the Air Force Research Laboratory to get that landscape or site picture in terms of what folks actually have available out to their labs and to their desktop. And we recognize that in many cases, again, because of acquisition cycles and just the difficulties of laying in, for instance, new physical fiber connections and so forth. We'll do that in a number of use cases where it's appropriate or where it's available for us to maybe leverage some things that are there and not perhaps being fully used. But we're very excited about the 5G capabilities that are coming to bases across the country and leveraging that. Within the buildings, leveraging, you know, the latest Wi-Fi type capabilities as well, securing those networks. And then in the cases where we can't get 5G, using a NEO or a LEO SATCOM kind of capability as, to our laboratories and our end users. We want to bring what I think of as parity of access to all the folks within AFRL. There are some minimum thresholds that we're targeting so that someone should have the equivalent level of access. Think of at least what you have for most of us in terms of access at home. We should at least be at that level as a minimum at work. And in some cases, we will have labs with equipment and facilities that need much greater bandwidth, and we'll be sure that we're addressing those needs as well. But very excited about leveraging a mix of capabilities from physical infrastructure and fiber, 5G, SATCOM, and what have you to bring that access.
Right. SATCOM and 5G then give you much more reliance on wireless broadband and maybe at the same time less need for wiring, which is expensive and gets obsolete, that would be in those places otherwise.
Absolutely. Yes, as you mentioned, the obsolete kind of paradigm that happens with actual physical fiber and so forth. I was thinking back, if you think back to the early 90s or mid-90s, if you were involved with networks and computers, what you thought was really exciting then, not so much today. So as you said, and it gives us another capability with 5G and the SATCOM of leveraging that investment that our commercial partners are making in improving those technologies.
And a final question, your acquisition strategy, are you using Networks, that is the contracting vehicle from GSA, services now, and will you use the EIS contract to get to the next generation?
That is another great question. We are surveying the opportunities that look like they are on the horizon. I think to move as quickly as possible and support the research and development mission of AFRL uniquely, we do need to enable that capability of speed and reactivity to bring on new services rapidly. So we are looking at the EIT contract vehicles. GSA continues to be an option. One of the principles we are going for is to try to form as many direct relationships with the technology providers themselves, and in most cases not have a middleman or a broker, which seems to drive some extra policy, sometimes bureaucracy, and slow down to have that. And so we want to have the fastest access to the best technology to maintain our innovative edge in AFRL. Looking, as I said, at a number of ways to do that. So we have our fingers crossed that some of these new contract vehicles that look like they're very close to award will give us access to a lot of those providers.
Dr. James Sumpter, Chief Enterprise Architect at the Air Force Research Laboratory. To hear any part of this interview again or share it with colleagues, please visit federalnewsnetwork.com and search Insights. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, sponsored by Verizon on Federal News Network.